Larry Queen and I, it is the Clubhouse and a podcast. Yes, what we do is we get you as close as possible to the game in Zimbabwe, digesting some of the stuff that's been happening. And there's a lot of cricket that's being played, okay? And then there is a lot of cricket that's coming. The first up is going to be the T20 World Cup that's coming up. And so excited about that. Zimbabwe's going, and they've named their 15 who are going to the World Cup. And I have a chat with Zimbabwean former first-class cricketer, Darlington Matambanazo, who's also still playing club cricket and also is a commentator. So he's a guy who knows quite a bit about cricket. So we couldn't have a chat about the World Cup squad that's been chosen. And then later on, we'll talk about the club T10 tournament that's been taking place, as well as the women's start in their quest for the T20 World Cup qualification. They just played the first match against, who do they play against? I know that the second match is Thailand, the third one is United Arab Emirates, and the first one was against Papua New Guinea, which they won by 8 wickets. So we're going to have a chat about that. Let's dive in. So, I'm here with Darlington Matambanazo, a first-class cricketer, commentator, still playing club cricket at the moment.
Yes, absolutely. I love that. Been having a lot of fun. Probably going to play another couple of seasons if my body allows me to.
Yeah? Yeah. You quite enjoy that, don't you?
Yes, I do. I mean, it makes me feel youthful, in a sense, you know, because I think when I love cricket from when I was a child, from when I was a boy, it was about maybe 9 or 10 when it became the sport, my favourite sport. And it just takes me back to some of those discoveries I made by myself as a young man. And you feel revitalised every time I play.
And also then I've seen those discoveries you play. You're with Royal, right? Yes. So you also seen that with young 19, 15, 16, 17-year-olds coming through the system.
Yeah, that's right. And there's some things that I've experiences I've seen and stuff that sometimes I'm able to actually make a difference. Mm. And it's always profoundly satisfying when you actually are able to make a difference.
We'll talk about that when we talk about the T10 in the next part of this program. And you've been commentating on that. So we're going to talk about the players who've done very well. But the big story is the World Cup squad. And for those that do not know what the squad is, before going to the details, or we go into the details of what qualification is, implications and so forth, the squad is Captain Craig Irvine, Ryan Burl, Regis Chakamba, Tenasha Tara, Brad Evans, Luke Jongwe, Clive Madande, Wesley Matevere, Wellington Masakaza, Tony Munyonga, Blessing Mzarabani, Richard Ngarava, Sekanda Raza, Milton Shumba, and Sean Williams. The non-travelling reserves are Tanaka Shivanga, Innocent Kaia, Kevin Kasuza, Tadewa Naishimarumani, and Victor Nyaruchi. First thoughts?
Well, it makes sense because we have to go back around about 3 months ago to see what the T20 stats locally in our local competition were, to see that that's basically what justifies that team. I think it's a process, a long-term process, because Zim Cricket have known that they were going to this World Cup, and they've been planning and creating sort of plans to say how we're going to get through that first stage of qualification, and then play how are we going to play once we've qualified. And so it's a long-term process, and I think that that's the result of that long-term planning process.
I'm looking at it as well. I mean, look, straight off the bat, I think the squad makes sense. Because over the last couple of months when we've played, certainly without the likes of Craig, without at some part we didn't, a long part of it, we didn't have Chatara, Blessing Zarabani, Wellington Masakaza, as well as Milton Shumba. We often say Zimbabwe is losing some of these matches because they don't have their best squad, certainly against India that was seeing that the shortcomings that were there. Now you've got, you've essentially got your main guys, you're being available. Perhaps a question many people have been asking, Manning, do you think he should have perhaps been picked? And in place of who?
Well, see, for me, like, Marumani, right, is been smashing around something that's just slightly better than league cricket, okay? And as I said, look, 3 months ago, we had a T20 competition, and he was good in that, okay? And that justified the selection that got him to play in series against Bangladesh, trips to Australia, and that sort of stuff, right? When he was, he wasn't automatically your first selection. And I think the other thing that we can't really, why I wouldn't make selection decisions on this recently completed T10, right, is because we are, A, not really sure about the quality. It's experimental. So we're not really, you can't go and say, well, listen, some guy exceeded in this experimental thing. Let's go and take him to a T20 World Cup, which is now a very traditional format, and say, well, he's going to go and make the transition from that experimental, shorter format and then be... do well in that in the more traditional game, you know, because I think everything has a learning curve, but it doesn't take away the fact that he was outstanding in T20, in this T10, sorry, but I don't think he justified selection in the context of all the cricket that's been played since the domestic T20 completed, and then the international matches that he's been a part of.
I suppose the other side, the argument I would say is, well, you know, other countries are going with non-traveling, with traveling reserves. So some teams are going with 18 players, as opposed to Zimbabwe is going with 15, and these guys are non-traveling reserves. Would you have rather say, let's go with a traveling reserves, maybe throw in a Marumani, Nyauchi, and Chianga?
I think most of those guys already have been to Australia, and I'm pretty certain that their visas from their last trip to Australia are still valid.
No, but I'm saying if you get injured today and we need you tomorrow.
No, I understand, but like if you already got 15 players there. So if those 15 aren't going to get you through a crisis, having 18 is not going to get you through a crisis either, you know what I mean? So my thinking is, if there is a real crisis and you need to send a thing, a guy's going to be ready to play a cricket match in 48 hours. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. From the time that that event that causes that crisis happens, and the time you mobilize him and move him to Australia, it's going to be 48 hours. And then he's going to struggle for that first game, but if it's still a lot of games to play, then, you know, he's going to make a contribution from that perspective. And then, you know, the other thing is, this is, to be quite frank, the guys who afford traveling reserves, 18 players, or some guys have 20 players, whatever it is, right? Zimbabwe's not the biggest cricket union in the world. India can afford that because Indian cricket is the national sport in India. England can afford that, you know.
Yeah, and they got lots of bucks. Eh?
Yeah, they got lots of bucks. But like, so in given our basic infrastructure, institutional frameworks and stuff, it's the smartest decision to make. Take 15, have 8, 20, the other 5 guys waiting, ready. I've seen them throughout the T10 competition. All been at Harare Sports Club. They've been at Harare Sports Club every day. Then practice sessions that have involved Tanaka Chiwanga, Victor Nyauchi, Marumani. I've seen them all in the nets consistently with the fitness trainer, and I've seen Lance Cruiser there as well. So there's a process, obviously, that's including them within those plans for anything happens in Australia. Those guys have to be in nick to arrive there. But what you can't do is really, you can't afford to take 3 guys when the probability of them playing is near zero, if you've got a squad of 15.
Because when I'm looking at it, if you look at it, let's look at up top. Because I know some people, going back to the Marumani question, we're going to go to the bowlers in just a bit. Some people are saying you should have gone in place of Clive Madande, or maybe, you know, like risk him because Marumani has kept gloves. But I mean, with that, I say, there was a match this past week when I think Richmond Mutumbami pulled a cramp or something like that, and couldn't keep. They didn't use Marumani to keep it, because in the same side in Great Zimbabwe, they went for Chimbirimiri Nelson, who was on the bench, to come and keep. So it means even within Great Zimbabwe at club cricket, they're not trusting him to with the gloves. And if he's not keeping gloves at domestic, any domestic level, would you take the risk of playing him to keep gloves at a T20?
My opinion is no, I wouldn't. And then my opinion is that there's generally 3 things that I'd look at if I was selecting a side. you need a wicketkeeper who's at the minimum level of competence. Okay, and so at that minimum level of competence, I would say Clive Madande just slightly ahead of Nyasha Mayao. Okay, I would also go and say what you ideally want is like, because you're playing in an ecosystem where other wicketkeeper batters around the world, right, are really good players. Okay, so Mohammad Rizwan, Pakistan, really good player.
Rishabh Pant.
Murali Kartik.
De Kock.
Quentin De Kock and Alex Carey.
Matthew Wade, even.
So what it is if you go and you take Clive Madande as your number one wicketkeeper, we've created a disadvantage for yourself.
No, I wasn't looking at...
No, I'm just saying.
I'm talking about the backup.
Yeah, because he's your backup wicketkeeper. Mm-hmm. Okay. But then what you don't have is... The other thing that you can't do is you can't have a less than competent wicketkeeper. And unfortunately, I think Marumani is that. So you can't take Marumani as a backup wicketkeeper because he's less than competent. He's been given international matches. He played, I think, his first couple of international matches as a wicketkeeper. And there were issues there. They were clearly there. And there's video footage of that stuff. It's not me being like nasty or anything, you know? And I haven't seen any improvement because I've seen him in the outfield since then. At all forms of cricket, I've seen him play, and down to club, basic club cricket. So I think that the realization is Marumani is never going to be a wicketkeeper. Clive Madande is going to be the best glove man around.
At the moment,
yeah. And then his batting is something has got, I think there's enough
to work with.
Yeah, there's enough good there. I had a conversation because I know Nyasha Mayao personally, so I had a conversation with him because he didn't have a very good T10 competition, and I just asked him, like, you know, you don't look mentally present. What's going on? You know what I mean? You know that you're not as far away from playing international cricket as it would seem right now. You know what I mean? Because this is my opinion. I think he's one of the best clubmen around.
Yeah.
You know, and he can actually bat. You know.
Because then the conversation then. As turned with Sanke saying, well, why not have, then why have Milton Shumba in there when you have, instead of Marumani, because Shumba is just coming from injury. And there are two things I picked two things I would use against that argument. For example, the fact that Shumba can play from anywhere from 3 to 6, yeah, and can bowl. And he has the fourth highest average by a Zimbabwean in T20s ever. And then...
I'm going to jump in there, sorry.
Just to
Milton Shumba has actually won matches for Zimbabwe international level.
That's the second part.
Marumani hasn't.
That's the second part I was going to go with. Cause and also he's got more shots.
Yeah.
And then to add there that Marumani, the only four players he can compete for a position with right now are Craig Irvine, Regis Chakava, Wesley Madebele, and Sean Williams.
I suppose.
So who of those are you dropping?
No, you can't. Like for me, you can't drop any one of those. Although Regis is not really competing. So I think
by competing, I'm saying
for a slot. Like, what I saw,
I'm saying top of the order. That's what I meant.
Yeah, but what I was going to suggest is I think that Regis is going to move further down the order. After that Bangladesh series, I might be wrong, but my feeling is that he's probably going to be moving down more into the 4, 5, 6 range rather than 1, 2, 3 range. I think Sean Williams is probably going to be 3, and then.
But the coach, Dave Houghton, likes his left right combination. Mm-hmm. So if anything, many might put Wesley as opening.
But I think that's something that's probably likely. Is that because Craig? If you can bat 3, it means you can open. So Craig can also be your opening and opener at number 3.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And we did see that during the Namibia series, he didn't get to open.
So, but then wouldn't then the adding to that, because it's a 20 over format. So it's not like the one day format, because you kind of see it with the classic battles, the wicketkeeper batters. There is one. Not Rizwan, what's his name? Adam Gilchrist would bat further down the order in a longer format, but in a shorter format, there's no problem with him opening because you're still a little bit fresh.
Yeah.
So, since Regis was successful in the qualifier, and he was often the guy who was getting Zimbabwe to 60 for 1 by the end of the power play or something of that nature, wouldn't you be tempted to just stick with that? Because that's what worked in T20, the last time it worked.
I know, but you see, the interesting thing for me is that I think once you've gone through qualifier, what you've got is the broadest, in the broadest sense, the quality of play is very different. Okay, because Ireland is essentially a test nation. Mm-hmm. Preparation.
Not just essentially, they are.
Yeah. I mean, like, they're new, that's why I say
essentially. Oh, yes.
You know, they're relatively new, but that's why I say essentially, that's why I use the qualification. The quality of preparation and bowlers and other stuff.
And they've got Tectoe as a big hitter as well.
Yeah, and then West Indies are again going to bring that kind of, in my opinion, on any day, on some days can be the best T20 team in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And Scotland are not bad. I mean, like, Zim has to go and beat Scotland and Ireland at a minimum to actually qualify.
I think if I'm Zimbabwe, I should be targeting a... I would want to beat the West Indies because... But then let's just look at the sequence of the games, by the way.
Mm.
The first game is against, on the 17th, against Ireland. The second game is against the West Indies.
Mm.
If you win the West Indies game, right, then Scotland isn't so much of a slippery banana type of thing. Because if you lose the second one, right, the nerves of the third match against Scotland, assuming you've won against Ireland,
mm.
then... the nerves of the third game, you could lose that on the basis of fear of winning, as opposed to what you call it, the fact that it's a relatively weakest team in the
league. Definitely. So it's not going to be an easy, like, a lot of people think we've qualified for the next round, like for the, you know, Super 12.
Mm.
But I don't think it's going to be that easy, because the other thing that you find is that you go to Australia, you've prepared to go play in Australia, all right? And then we have these weird weather phenomena, whatever. And you arrive there, and suddenly on the day you get to the ground, it's this wicket that just suits the Irish
conditions,
because Ireland play in certain conditions, very different to what we play in here. And these things happen even at World Cups, you know what I mean? So it's or even Scotland. Suddenly on that day, Scotland get 2 days of these conditions. And then they have 2 days of conditions. One day they have New Zimbabwe, then the next day they have the West Indies. Win those two games, and before you know it, Scotland is actually ahead of the West Indies and Zimbabwe. I mean, things like that have happened at World Cups before. So when I look at it, it's a lot harder than you think, because it's the whole pressure of... it's not a series where you have like 3 games to decide the other series. It's you've got to win each game, every single one game... that counts as the one you've got to win, and that's how you get through into the next round. And you can have a bad day, you know what I mean? It's possible to have a bad day,
or someone comes in as a freakishly good day and ends up scoring 100 or something.
Yeah, I mean, like guys like Balbirnie, I think he should be the Irish captain at the moment. I'm not sure. He's a good player, like a really good player, you know.
Brilliant player.
Yeah,
I always speak about the big hitting of Tectoe, for example.
Yeah. Tectoe. So
brilliant hitter.
If you get a guy like that, have a good day. All right, he can totally take a game away from you, and then West Indies have got like this amazing depth. Again, they have a thing, then you suddenly lost 2 games.
Suddenly, you're packing your bags and go home.
Yeah, so it's a bit more complicated.
Let's talk about the bowling aspect.
Mm.
If we look at the squad. Bar two players, the rest are players who were at the qualifier in Bulawayo. So Chivanga was one of the 15, as was Tony Munyonga.
Mm.
And they have had their positions taken by the find of the winter, that is Brad Evans.
Mm-hmm.
And the other one being and Kaya is the other one who misses out, because he was in the squad. But so now I want to talk about the bowling. You've got Blessing and Tendai Chatarawa coming from injury.
Mm.
And then you've got... who do you start with? Because Brad Evans, albeit his best stats are in ODIs,
mm-hmm.
ever since he's come in, would you take the risk with him? Ngarava has been brilliant, so he's probably going to keep a spot on the team.
Mm.
If you're going with three seamers, that is you're going with... They're saying, traditionally, if there weren't injuries, you just go probably Blessing, Richard, and Chatara, with Luke Jongwe as the
sort of number 8 all-rounder type. Yeah. So would you then say, maybe not put two guys who are both coming from injury and then go with Brad Evans instead?
See, for me, the interesting thing is, like, Brad Evans is going there, right? He's already part of the squad. It's unlikely, because the other thing we know is Tendai Chatara has done this before, come back from injury, performed well, gotten re-injured, okay? But what he did do is the last time he came back from injury, he actually finished a series, okay? And then got re-injured. So he understands his body. I think he understands his body because he's been around. And then Blessing Zarabani has done that as well. He had a stress fracture of the back and came back from that. And stress fractures of the back, at least during my playing time, very few guys actually came back from that, because you have to be quite a determined athlete. And you have to really be disciplined about how you work out and look after yourself, you have to do a lot of rehabilitation on your action and stuff. So there's something about those two guys historically that suggests that they can come back from whatever it is that they've had, the problems they've had up until now. And then the other thing is if you've got Brad Evans and Richard Ngarawa, and one of those two, you've actually got quite a good bowling side.
Mm.
You know what I mean? Or if you've got those three and Brad Evans is sitting on the bench, you've actually got quite a good bowling side. So I don't know. I'm not particularly worried. I don't think injury is going to be an issue, because also Dave Houghton is staking his reputation on this.
And also, he looks like a conservative. He's a bit conservative when it comes to
bowling. Yeah,
because he could have played Blessing in Australia.
Yeah.
But he's saying, once, no, we've often brought these guys early, and then something goes wrong.
And once the series had gone, there was no point sense in playing him. You're not risking him. Once they'd lost that series in Australia, it was a series they expected to lose anyway. So, for me, I don't think, because his reputation is on the line. Mm. I mean, there's a minimum expectation he's given us about winning at least a couple of games there. You know what I mean? And then the Super 12 looks after itself. So I think that this they've done their work and their research and their homework, and then they've said that the probabilities that this decision is going to backfire are low enough that they're willing to go with those bowlers.
Zimbabwe haven't announced it, but Somerset announced that Steve Kirby is going to come and become the lead bowling coach in Zimbabwe. At the end of the season. The season for Somerset ends at the end of September, which means he's available just before the World Cup.
Mm.
So you're saying there's enough with him in there from the firepower to work with? Or you think it's a bit too late for him to have an effect right now if he travels with the team?
Well, I think a good coach will always have effect.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like, a good coach will always, because what it is, a lot of the times, I think, once you've, because by the time they've arrived, they arrive in Australia, there shouldn't be any real, like, technical, physical issues. It's going to be some mental issues that you've got to work out. And then maybe just like stuff like, often bowling is about bowling the right lengths as the game progresses, being able to change your lengths and lines correctly, you know what I mean, getting the timing, understanding behind those sort of things, right? And these are very much, much finer points that a coach can do. That's his job. He understands that more clearly than I do, you know what I mean?
Mm.
And then it's his job to get his bowlers to work through those patterns of play correctly. And he can be useful, because I've also heard very, very good things about him as a bowling coach. You know, because when I saw I think we saw the same article or set of articles,
mm-hmm.
that said he was coming out, I just went and checked out who he is.
Mm-hmm.
And I've heard some good, really, really good information about out there about him as a bowling coach.
The big effect for me, though, that many people don't talk about, is the effect that Zulu has had on these guys. Because you can see there's a lot more confidence in their battings. Certainly the biggest expression of that confidence is Raza, who, congratulations to him, became the first Zimbabwean to win the ICC Player of the Month.
Mm.
Three centuries in 1 month. I don't know when last we had a Zimbabwean score 3 ODI centuries in the same month.
Mm.
But you can actually even see the way Richard Ngarava, I had a conversation with him recently, I did an interview for 3Mark TV, says he is working to becoming an all-rounder. That sort of confidence that I can actually hit the ball no matter where I am down the order. that's the sort of thing you want to have, isn't it? No. I mean, ultimately, you want your batters to be the one that win the match. You shouldn't only have a situation where you say, well, Ngara was there, you should need a 7 off 3 balls, and you didn't get it, and you're blaming him for not winning it.
No, yeah, I mean, definitely. I mean, but you do want your batters to win matches, but I think if you have a resource base like we do, all right, and Richard Ngara has clearly done extra work to get his batting game in a certain direction, and what we haven't seen, I'm actually thinking that his bowling is improving with his batting.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? He's not actually getting worse so that he gets another aspect of his cricket any better. I think most coaches would actually allow that. You know what I mean? Because what you're going to do is, he's got to understand that, yeah, you're still going to be batting 9 or 10, 8, yeah. 9 or 10, but whatever runs you get, bonuses back there, good on you. You know what I mean?
Unless he becomes incredible and starts hitting 50s. Then yeah, let's try your number 7.
Yeah. And then what that will do is again, it gives you a lot of depth and ability to actually experiment and try different things if you've got batters coming through like that. I really encourage it. Personally, I think there's a lot of work because yeah. I think what's going to happen is the analysis is better the higher up he goes.
Mm.
And so you'll find that as he goes higher, the more he plays consistently, he plays at a higher level, like T20 World Cup, and the analysis is better, and then the ability to execute plans is going to be much, much better than it was here at T10. I think Bangladesh were caught by surprise, and India
was caught
by
surprise.
Yeah, so
it's already got Finch out 3 times.
Yeah, that's right. So it's those sort of things there. But now they've been like, okay, well, Zimbabwe can actually be a serious side. Because remember, we just won a game in Townsville. So people are going to take us a lot more seriously. Take the analytics they do about us a little bit more seriously.
Mm.
So it's going to be a little bit harder, I think, in the future.
Yeah, so, but I do want to say, for those guys who haven't been chosen, I think everybody forgets that there's a bucket load of cricket from November all the way until the qualifier next year. Mm. So there will be ample opportunity.
And there has been a bucket load of cricket before this. Mm. I mean, like, so for me, has played quite a lot of cricket. You know what I mean? In the lead up to his being dropped for this T20s tour.
World Cup.
He's played quite a lot of cricket.
I mean, in effect, if it's a good thing because if Ngarava, Chatara and so forth, they'd not got him injured, then they would be playing most of these matches and he wouldn't get a chance. But it shows that Zimbabwe, as opposed to before, actually has a stronger bench. I wouldn't say it's as strong as you want it to be,
yeah.
But you've now got a stronger bench.
Yeah, and then you know what I also liked is, I hear that there's a Pakistan tour coming. Mm-hmm. I haven't had confirmation dates and stuff like that, mm-hmm. an ASI tour.
Mm-hmm.
So those guys...
will be active.
Yeah, those are generally the guys who make up the bulk of your ASIs, is those guys who didn't make Ghana national team tour. So that's a good thing, because Pakistan also aren't going to send... like a soft A side. They're going to send you probably a good side, a really good side, guys who they really think they should be investing money in and have a future as Pakistani cricketers. So I think that'll be testing for them, because what is happening now is Tanaka Chavanga, India series, was allowed to be the leader in the frontline bowler, and he didn't come through the way he should have. Brad Evans came through slightly better.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And that's... at root, those are the sort of decisions that drive the selection, that he gets left behind and Brad gets to go there.
Because ultimately, you got to take wickets. And one of the things that Zimbabwe oftentimes have been at fault for is not completing the jobs when it comes to taking wickets. Because you look at bowling out Australia for 141, you can't forget about that.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, this is in Australia, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'll also add, very importantly, is... The fact that now with the league season starting on the 1st of October, before we've had the domestic league season starting in November, sometimes even December, that means by the time you've got Afghanistan coming in after the World Cup, you've got guys who've been playing cricket for quite a while, and you've now got more people to choose from, a guy like Kevin Cousins that can find form. And you know, different guys can find form back home. You've got an opportunity.
Yeah, no. I mean, like for me, I'm just you mentioned. While you're right, you mentioned Kevin Kasuza. he was so absent.
Like T10.
Emotionally in the T10. I mean, it was like we have an expression, lights are on, but nobody's home.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, he was there, but like he wasn't there. He just wasn't, he didn't look for me bothered. You know what I mean? And it's a real pity because often when you've been dropped, because my understanding is that guys already knew before this T10 started who was going and who wasn't. It just hadn't been announced to the public. And so he already knew. Marumani knew. Okay,
but he went and
took it in a very different way to the way that Kevin Kasuza took it, to the way that Innocent Kahir took it. You know what I mean? Because Innocent Kahir was another one who was largely absent.
You know, it reminds me of when I think it was 2018, tour of Bangladesh.
Mm.
Craig gets dropped for the second test after won the first one.
Mm.
You see him, his attitude. He was running on as a 12th man.
Mm.
This is Craig Irvine, one of your senior batters,
mm.
the best number three Zimbabwe has had, certainly of his generation.
Mm.
He's running, he's giving guys water and so forth. Humbled himself.
Mm.
Came back to domestic, absolutely pulverized domestic.
Mm.
Top scorer in the Pro 50, the Logan Cup, and the T20 tournament. Couldn't drop him for 2019. I think it was Sri Lanka or somebody came in.
Mm-hmm.
And it was Afghanistan or something, the next tour.
The next tour,
you
yeah.
couldn't drop him.
Yeah,
because he came in and said, look, this is what you're missing.
No.
Keep me in mind.
No, I know. And so for me, as I said to you, like, I really think there's something inevitable about Marumani.
Mm.
Okay, because what it is every time I see him, he's doing something. He's working at his game. Like, I bump into him quite a lot.
Mm.
Okay. And he's always like hitting balls. He's doing, he's fielding. He's doing something to try and get himself, game time. Like a lot of guys, I've seen a lot of national team players sometimes don't turn up for just club matches. Apparently, he didn't miss a single one for Royal Cricket Club for Uprising, who he's playing for.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, like when you see stuff like that, that just makes him for me profoundly likable from
mm-hmm.
a cricket perspective. Mm-hmm. And then you also find that guys who go and give the little bit of extra. Always the guys who I've exceed against expectations succeed and then exceed against expectations are the guys who are putting in extra work all the time. Unfortunately, I'm old enough to actually see, I've seen that in a few times. There's something about Marumani that's inevitable. You might not be much of an international cricket, see much in international cricket for the next 18 months, but I get the impression that every time there's an opportunity to give him something. To give him game time, there's a move or belief or system in the thing that says, okay, we've played two matches this season, let's give Marumani a go. We've had a couple of games, let's give Tony a go. You know what I mean? And what it is it just keeps these guys understanding they have to keep developing as cricketers.
And given that there's pretty much an ICC event every year until 2027,
mm-hmm.
there's opportunities,
yeah.
ample opportunity.
Yeah.
For him to play. I think he's got himself a chance of getting into the ODI squad next year.
Absolutely.
He's certainly
Absolutely.
Excelled at ODI more than any other format
yeah.
since he came into the national setup. So we're going to take a break now. We're going to come back and talk about the just ended T10 and the women's match from this afternoon.
Cool.
Welcome back to the second part of the Clubhouse End podcast, and after talk about the World Cup team, the T20 World Cup qualifier women picked up a big victory today, 8-wicket victory. The star batter and bowler being Kellis Glovo, the 16-year-old, took 3 for 18 and then she made 25, 3 for 18 from her 4 overs. And then we are 2 for 9 from Princess Marangano, two for ten. Nomvelo Sabanda took 2 for 9 in her 3 overs. Pretty impressive, isn't it?
Yeah, she's been very good. I've been really impressed by what I've seen by Kellis Glovo in particular. Also because she's so young. She's just 16. And looks like a really good one for the long future of Zim cricket.
And I look at it and I also look at it. Everybody talks a lot about the players, but the effect of Gary Brent on that side, they seem so disciplined.
Well, I know, like, I grew up with Gary, played cricket, a lot of cricket with him. Really intense individual, really, really likes to win. and really, really likes to work hard. You know what I mean? He's one of the, so he's going to bring that sort of element of his character is going to dominate that whatever team he's in charge of.
And then also, of course, Sean Myers. She's getting back to her form, the kind of form we knew of her before she went to the went down to South Africa for a couple of years and started pursuing hockey and domestic cricket there. She's showing the quality that Zimbabwe had missed for a while.
Yeah, and I think probably that little break was good for her as well, because cricket and hockey actually complement each other quite nicely. So she's in good shape. She looks like she's really fit, and she's been playing a high standard of cricket.
And also quite enjoy, of course, the bully of them all. That is the former captain, Chipo Mngere Tripana.
Oh yes, yeah.
She got a quick 20 today.
Yeah, again, a really good player. So you know what it is that the women's side is looking very nicely rounded. Like they've got a bit of everything: left arm, right arm, spin and see and quick batters who can bat basically all the way down. So I think it's a really, really good unit.
So they've just dismissed the Papua New Guinea. They should be expected to beat Papua New Guinea, to be honest, correct?
Yeah, I think so. Absolutely, yeah.
And they're now looking at they're going to play Thailand. They beat Thailand in a warm-up match, but this is a different kettle of fish where their points at stake. So I think they might be a little bit need to be more careful, but I think they're a bit more street smart than when they played Thailand a year ago.
That's right, because Thailand were here and they had a round of matches at Takashinga. And I think Thailand won that 3-2. Exactly. I think the difference was it wasn't actually talent. It was just an understanding, match awareness or street smarts. Thailand got the right decisions when it was when the pressure was on at turning points in matches, and Zimbabwe made a few of the wrong ones. So that was the difference then. But I think there's been a lot more cricket. The girls have played a lot more cricket and have travelled. They've actually travelled extensively since that series against Thailand.
And then the final match on Wednesday is against, I think, the United Arab Emirates. So everything going well. It should be 9 points and through to the next round.
Absolutely, yeah. I think they should win those three games. And again, it's because I think it's a rounded team. Everybody seems to be in quite good form. And a lot of the key players are playing well.
Yeah, so going back to that, 1/8 wickets today. But another win today was a 17-run win in the final for Great Zimbabwe Patriots. This is a tournament that you had a keen eye on, not only out of interest, but you were one of the commentators.
Yes, I was. And what I liked about it, it rewarded preparation. You find that I think Great Zimbabwe as a unit were really, really well prepared. And Taliwa Nashimarumani's been playing a lot of cricket recently, so he was also in the form of his life. And I think he really understood that how much he could actually get away with, and he played some really outrageous cricket throughout. And then for me, another one, I've played a little bit of cricket with Costa Jo. I was really impressed by his maturity, because I played club cricket with him, and we've been looking for a leader at Royal Cricket Club for a long time, and no one had actually considered Costa Jo until now. I mean, he was really good out there, made a lot of the right decisions. Calm head, and then the other thing for me was Sydney Morwalla. Was outstanding. Like he looks like he could really be one for the future.
Also great to see some of the guys like I'd say Carlo, that is Shingim Sakadza, getting runs, but also leading from the front, being competitive, taking the most wickets in the tournament. Meaning they do take this seriously. It's not just a runabout.
No, of course. I mean, it is, and I think if this thing is handled, this T10 concept is handled properly, over the next 4 or 5 years, it could grow into something. It's got this possibility of growing into a real monster, because the cricket is exciting, and it's short enough that you can actually slot it into interesting time frames. Just one game after work, midweek, something like that. You can come and watch something like that. Mm-hmm. Take a long lunch, come and watch some cricket, do business while you're at the cricket, and it's wonderfully like well made in that sort of way.
That means that we should be calling for the lights, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. I was going to say that is that like particularly if you could get consistently maybe one or two games after the dark during the week, and then longer play during the weekends. I think that could be very, very good for the game, and it creates an atmosphere. Play when cricket under lights feels so different to cricket out in the sunshine. It creates a very different kind of atmosphere, which I think would actually be really, really good for the format.
Someone who not many people are going to talk about when it comes to the final is Richmond Mutombabi. He's just been the rock in the front there. Second highest scorer in the tournament with 290, just behind Marumani. Eclipsed Sikandar Raza, who had been flying until then. But he's come in good, isn't he?
No, he has. He has. And what he's really done is he's staked a claim to be reconsidered in the future. There's still quite a lot of cricket to be played end of this year and into sort of April next year, national side cricket. And he's really started to state a claim to be included in that for me. Just the form and the way he's gone about making his runs. Really, really responsible and consistent. And I hope that form leads into Logan Cup, 4-day and 50 overs and 20 overs cricket subsequent to now.
And then looking at that, the fact that he came up at the top, this gives him an opportunity to hit it very well and make a lot of runs as well.
Yeah, and I also think that it creates this interesting thing is globally, like in world cricket, we see a lot of wicketkeeper batsmen opening the batting. It's a skill that can be learned. Okay, and so what he's clearly done is he's made a lot of effort to actually learn those skills, and I think it can only be good for him.
And then now going to some of the players that I think to watch out for, really made talked about Sydney Murombo and Costa Joe. Another unfortunate Mhlanga, and he's got something in there as far as bowling.
Oh, definitely. And what it is just fine tuning. There's a little fine tuning that's required. I also liked Majeka, who played for Lions, I think he was. Kudakwashi Majeka. Got some real pace. And for me, they both exude the desire to bowl really quick.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I think that is something that you can actually really work with and develop. And then all you've got to do is just, for both of them, you've got to tidy up their mechanics, the actual bowling action part.
Get more cleaner.
Get it cleaner. Mm-hmm. And then the understanding comes with playing more games. As long as they can find some cricket to play consistently, I think they'll be really, really good.
Wayne James's kid, former wicketkeeper for Zimbabwe, Wayne James, and batsman, and also was one of the selectors or coached Tuskers, I think.
That's right,
Tuskers. His son, Brandon James, has got quite an interesting accuracy about him of the two matches that I've watched him.
Yeah, but you know what? For me, what really impressed me was his batting. Because I think he's didn't really get a chances up front, and then he got a couple of chances towards the end of the competition and hits the ball cleanly. And again, there's a calmness about him under pressure. A couple of times that he did play, that just suggests that there's something that you can really work with there. But again, I think he's just got to go out there and keep making runs wherever it is that you find yourself. He's just got to go make runs, whether it's like league cricket in Bulawayo. Can find some, you know, something else to play, if you can get into the Tuskers setup and stuff, and he's just got to continue to make runs.
Big disappointment for me was the fielding, a lot of drop catches though.
Yeah, I know, but like also the other thing is this is you just go and you look at unfortunately, generally the people who are guilty of dropping the majority of the drop catches were club cricketers. Okay, most of the professional cricketers took the bulk of their catches. It's worrisome that Brad Evans dropped two today.
Yeah.
Real worry. It was also worrisome that Kevin Kutsuza dropped some catches, important catches.
Marumani dropped a couple.
Marumani dropped, yeah, but like generally, you find that there's a big difference between the guys who are professional cricketers and the club cricketers who are semi-professional or social cricketers.
Could it be also a sense of maybe some of it is pre-season? Because this is essentially a pre-season tournament.
Yeah, but again, you see, there's a difference. Is professional cricketers don't really have seasons. They play all year round. Hobby cricketers like myself, I'm only going to start training now. I haven't been training since my last match about 6 weeks ago. So most hobby cricketers are the same. Is they only train when there's actually matches in the foreseeable future. And I think that showed out there that a couple of the guys just aren't of the same standard. They have the talent, but it's the preparation side of their games that was a little bit lacking.
So some fun trivia of the first 5-4, Sidi Mirombo. The first 50 came from Marumani. And the top five scores for the tournament are all from Great Zimbabwe. A couple of 130s and a couple of 120s.
Oh, right. Okay. Yeah. I was thinking individual scores. Yes, you're right. Because I think four of the top individual scores are from Great Zimbabwe, and Skander Raza has one in their individual batters. For the top five team scores are Great Zimbabwe. Absolutely right.
And then finally, it was great to see even guys like Hamilton Masakaza getting in there. And Alton Chigumbura.
Chamu Chibaba was also around.
And that sort of like, I think, gives the opportunity to sort of give back to the players and, you know, the young players.
You know, like
game management and stuff like that.
Yeah, yeah. Like, so for me, I think the there's a lot you actually learn by how senior players conduct themselves on the field. So what you'll notice is often senior players aren't flustered when the game, you know, because everybody can tell when turning points in a match are going to happen, right? And you'll generally find that inexperienced players are flustered at that point in the game, and then experienced players, because they're slightly more aware, no, okay, this is where it happens, so I've got to really, really focus in and get it right. And you notice this when you're on a field with someone, when you're having conversations as you pass each other between overs, and you pick up a lot just by being on the field with experienced players who understand where the cycle of a match, a game actually is.
So that will call what many would call elite mentality.
Well, I don't know, like game awareness. Game awareness. It's understanding where the game is, how the game is, where the game is. All right, because every game of cricket has its phases, and often I think clusters of wickets fall around the changes in phases. If you understand what I'm saying, and so. I think the very, very elite players have a clearer understanding of those phases. The very elite players also have an understanding of, actually, this is where I should start taking risks or avoid taking risks and that sort of stuff. And you learn that by actually playing with other elite players. It's inefficient. The most inefficient way to learn is by yourself, through trial and error. Okay, it's the most effective way in the long run, but it also helps to have mentorship in anything that you do.
Thank you so much, Dali Temutabana. So we're having a chat closer to the World Cup and during the World Cup, but I appreciate the chat.
No, thank you. I always like having conversations about cricket with you.
All the best.
So I look forward to those chats.
And then also there's domestic, so that's also fun to watch. You'll be playing for Royal this year, won't you?
Yes, I will be playing for Royal.
And will there be a new captain, or are you holding on to that for a bit?
I shouldn't have said this, but I really like Costa Joe as an option, but and I'm going to put his name forward as an option. And see what happens.
Okay, all the best.
All right, thanks, Larry.
Cheers.
Cheers.
Okay, that was fun. Just make sure you subscribe to the Clubhouse End podcast on whatever podcatcher is available on Spotify. It's available on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, whatever podcatcher you have. Just subscribe, and every time we have a new episode, it's going to be out. I'm going to have Darlington on an episode in a couple of days or weeks, you know. We're going to talk as we get closer to the World Cup, and also the domestic season in Zimbabwe starting on the 1st of October. So there's a lot of cricket that's coming, so we're getting closer and closer to the game in Zimbabwe. My name is Larry Kwirirai. Do get in touch on Twitter at Kwirirai with a YI at the end, and also on Instagram, Larry Kwirirai has got a YI at the end. Otherwise, email larry@3-mob.com. Take care of yourself and the people that you love. As I say, from where I come from, asi Luisa Sevenza. Take care of yourself.
This week's episode has come to an end, but the fun doesn't have to stop here. If you have any questions, suggestions, or feedback, head over right now to Twitter and Facebook and like, share, and get involved. Join us next time.